Okay, so I want to add a perspective first. We saw two major machlokes in the Rishonim about Shein, really. The idea that the Gemara says that Shein is defined by Hana Lehazeka. So how exactly does that play out? Is Hana the issue, or is Hana something which defines it negatively as not something else? How exactly does it impact this whole discussion? Where exactly does Karen find this definition? So we mentioned two machlokes in the Rishonim, if you recall. One is the Rashba against his Talmud, that the question is, let's say you have an animal that bites into something with the intention to eat it, but ends up dropping it, so the damage comes from other things other than him consuming the food. So even though the Gemara had said that biting, as opposed to eating, biting is considered to not be shame, it's considered to be Karen, it seems. But, says the Rashba, not always. If biting is the beginning of an attempt to eat, so therefore that's called Hana Lehazeka, and that's called Shein. And he gets into how even a snake also has Hana to some extent. I don't know if I mentioned that, you know, there's some interesting just parallels. Shouldn't let this go unmentioned. So we talked about how there's an interesting parallel to Hilchos Lashon Hara from the whole Nachash comparison of the question of this Hana. Should also mention, while we're talking about such things, you know, the Gemara Maseches Yoma talks about the prohibition of Nekima. One is not supposed to take revenge. But the Gemara goes back and forth about how absolute that is. And in that context, the Gemara says that a Talmud Chacham may sometimes have to respond, say, if there's an attack on Kavodat Torah. And in that context, the Gemara says that Kol Talmud Chacham she'eno nokem v'noter kenachash eino Talmud Chacham. That it's important to stand up for Kavodat Torah, and therefore the Talmud Chacham has to strike back like a nachash. So what does that comparison to a nachash mean? It's got to be vicious. It's got to be, is it based on the Mishnah, that in Tesvav, that he's got to be untamable? You know, the one exception to that list. So it's interesting, you know, what you assume there's a whole integration here of different concepts. So many, many, many Mefarshim will hit on the same point. That when it comes to the Nachash, they're assuming that the Nachash doesn't get any Hana. So therefore, the Talmud Chacham, if he is going to respond, there shouldn't be any Hana in the response. Like, okay, he's got to do what he has to do in order to protect Kavodat Torah, but he's not enjoying it. And that's a part of the model here, that it has to be separated from anything personal. Now, within that, though, there still are two versions, because many assume, that maybe this takes it out of this whole context, that we're not talking actually about the Nachash biting. Maybe we're talking about the Nachash eating. Because that, there is a reference to Parshas Bereishis, where the klal of the Nachash is that he eats the dirt. So maybe that's the message here, that just like the Nachash just eats dirt and doesn't enjoy what he's eating, it's not a meal. So the Talmud Chacham does what he has to do, but it doesn't have any Hana. That's how most of the Sfarim understand it. The Rav Yonah and Aibshitz, I think, understood a little differently, that it's talking about the biting of the Nachash, and again, he's assuming there's no Hana from that, and says more than that. That scientifically, you know, that the Nachash, when he bites, not only does he not benefit, he actually weakens himself. So too, the Talmud Chacham has no interest in getting involved in the machlokas, and there's no interest in striking back, And ad kidei kach, that it even weakens him to do that. It's not going to make him feel good at all. But nonetheless, he's doing it only lishma, only kavara Torah. So it's just another application, this whole idea of the nachash and hanah. Does he get hanah? Does he not get hanah? It's a much bigger sugya than you think. So just a question. It has impacts on a lot of things. It impacts the hashkaf of lashon hara. It impacts the hashkaf of the kimur netira. It impacts how we understand the av of the told of shein. There's a lot to work with in just a question of just how much hanah the snakes get. Yes, Jed?
Does anyone read in the pshat about it actually getting
hana? I don't know. I mean, there could be more pshatim in this, but that would be... Even that, even if you want to say like the Rashba, the point is minimal hana. There's no one who says he gets more hana than the other animals. So the mushal's got to mean something. I mean, you could think maybe it means the viciousness. It sounds like pashtus, the Gemara, it sounds like it means that it's viciousness, right? Because, you know, you would think that if you're invoking the snake, you're trying to say that it's sharp like a snake, and that you could get that from a vakama also, because you could get that from the Mishnah that says that this is one of the animals that's always dangerous, and unlike all the other animals, this one doesn't get tamed. So it's hard to know what to do with that, but many Mephorshim take it in a different direction and say it's not about the viciousness, but it's about the lack of any kind of personal enjoyment that's going on. Okay, so we talked about that machlokes, the Rashba and his Talmud. The Rashba says that that is still called shein, and the Talmud says, no, that's not called shein. That is something else. That is probably Karen, it's a toldah of Karen, because ultimately he didn't actually consume it. We talked a little bit about the beer of what that might be about. And we also mentioned the machlokes on Daf Gimel, the question of what does it mean that what the Gemara says is shein, is tinfa peros lahanaso, but the question is what does that model mean? So according to Rabbeinu Chananel, it means that it relieved itself. And again, we're not using that euphemistically, but focusing on the relief, and euphemistically, but focusing on the literal relevance of that word. And the Rashmi Sanz says, no, that can't be it, because it doesn't impact on the shore that there were the peros there. So it must be that it was benefiting from the peros somehow by cooling himself off on it. So Rav Asher Weiss has an interesting discussion about this for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's interesting because it brings a new perspective on this question. And ultimately, he takes it in a different direction. Says that, what is the yesod of hana lehazeka? Why is that relevant? Why do we care? So we mentioned last week from David Pravarsky that essentially, this is one of a number of things, not the only thing, but that could be a mutually exclusive definition with Mishuna. That something that is considered to be unusual would mean that it's not something the animal enjoys, or it's not something the animal does just as regular living, like walking and relieving itself. So therefore, we're left with nothing else, so then it's the default definition of kavana bezeko, and that's the same thing essentially as Mishuna, as he understood it. But Rav Asher Weiss suggests two additional understandings of what shein could be, and then ultimately says it's not really about that. But he invokes both of these same machlokes in that we've spoken about in addressing this, both of these same points, the Rashba and his Talmud and the Tosfos Sanz and the Ben Chananel. And he says maybe hana means that since the animal enjoys it, so then there's an extra Yetzahara in the animal, because it's going to be drawn to that because it's enjoyable. So if it's drawn to that, so then that creates a greater chov on the bailim to guard against it. Maybe that's the issue. Or alternatively, maybe we're using nene in a different sense. That maybe we're saying, ultimately, the animal, and therefore, by extension, the owner, benefited. Right? We have a concept in Choshen Mishpat of nene, used differently, meaning that there is always a discussion. Let's say somebody helps you out, and you didn't ask for it, but they give you material benefit. Are you obligated to pay them back for it? Because you're nene, because you benefited. So maybe the chap here is that when the animal just does something destructive, it's dam destructive, okay, so then that's one thing. But if the animal also fulfilled some need, so then maybe like we would find in other such cases, maybe the bailim should have to pay for that. Even though it's not going to match up 100%, doesn't seem to fit the rules of nene, for example, correlating it to the damage done instead of to how it actually benefited the owner in a more generalized sense, that's not going to fit. But maybe these are two possible angles to consider here. Sammy?
I just have a question on each of those. For the second one first, mm-hmm. What's an example of an animal causing nezek that's more beneficial to me because it's my animal and therefore I would have to pay some sort of a difference based off of that?
Because I have to feed my animal. Right? So if my animal ends up satisfying itself by eating your stuff, so maybe we should say, okay, I have to pay the bill.
Okay.
Now again, it's not going to be like he said, it's not a perfect match, because it wouldn't really correlate to what the damage is. It would be defined differently, but maybe that's a part of the logic here. Hi.
I wonder if we could plug in this one that Shiva was cooking on.
Okay, the tshuva of Cook about behav to l'recha kamocha.
If it's beneficial from damaging person, I mean, like, nezek to someone that would be beneficial.
So he says that normally you have to assume that nezek is usur because of behav to l'recha kamocha. But if you could make a case that were you would be happier to have this done than not, then it should be mutter for him also. But here the hana is going to the other guy. That makes it a little harder to justify. The hana is going to the bailim. But ultimately, here, just as far as the yesod in the whole Dalet Avos Nezikin thing, he ultimately concludes that that's not really the story here. That it's not really totally on this. He also proves that these two machlokasin are not totally on each other. It's possible to split the difference, as the Meiri does, as he notes. I don't have to be telling each other. It depends on how you want to understand things. But he says, ultimately, he doesn't think that this is really the way to go. This is because these two cheshbonos, right, that you have to be more careful because he has a taiva to do it, or that you have to pay because the animal benefited, both of those are assuming that something like Shein is a reason to obligate somebody in Teshlum. And he and many other Achronim say, and this is a whole discussion, which we're limiting because we're trying to keep the abstract conceptual to a minimum, but we want to keep it involved when it's relevant, that the whole notion of Avos Nezikin, ultimately the Maskana is that the reason one is chayiv in Nezikin is because of the tzara shavah shebehen, right? Because of the common element, which is what? That darkum lahazik u'shmiras analacha. So, shein, things like that, these are not reasons to be mechayiv. The reason that you're mechayiv the owner is because of the general principle. Darkum lahazik u'shmiras analacha. And the whole significance and the whole discussion in the Gemara about Haldosei and Kiyotze Behen or not, the whole significance is once we know something is in the parsha of Chiyuv Nezikin, then there are details that are different, like we've been seeing Rishas HaRabim and this and that. So for the details, then that's where we bring in these definitions. But they're not the reason for the Chiyuv in the first place. Hanah lahazeko is not a reason why you're chayiv. You're chayiv because darka mahazik shmiras and alecha. So therefore, he thinks ultimately that the whole path is not really the path to figure things out here. Hi.
Is this similar to Lubarsky saying that Karen is a mazik, but Shane and Rega aren't necessarily like mazik? You know what I mean?
Yeah, essentially, it's not similar. That would maybe be a detail of this, that he's splitting up. It's really kind of a side-by-side point. He's saying that once we have this notion of darka mahazik shmiras and alecha, you should know that there could still be subdivisions and say that some of them are darka mahazik as a mazik and some of them are darka mahazik as they exist. But ultimately, the mechayiv, and these other, the Brisker Rav talks about this, others talk about this also, that the nature of the avos nezikin, after the Gemara goes back and forth about it, is that it's not that there are four mechayivim here or however many avos you end up counting, but that there's one category that's mechayiv. And the notion of avos nezikin is just to make different halachas understood within their individual contexts. Okay. So that's one point, just to flesh out on that. Now, another issue that I think we had left kind of in the middle of was we entered into kind of a logical conundrum. Now, we saw that Shane is Pater B'Shus HaRabim, and Regel is Pater B'Shus HaRabim. So why is that true? So, the Rush, did you get a chance to see the Rush inside? Right, that was on today's list, or at the Rush in the beginning. So the Rush says, according to the Rif, that it's because Or Chayu. It's because this is the derech of the animal. Now, as he notes, well, why do I say that? Isn't it a pasuk? A pasuk say, Ubir b'steyacher. So that should create a p'tur of Rishus HaRabim. So he says probably what the Rif is coming to do is to explain the intent of the pasuk. And he notes, understanding it that way would have a nafkamina. Right, what's the nafkamina that he gives? You have a long tree. You have something that extends from a potential Rishus HaNizak to the Rishus HaRabim. The animal is walking in the Rishus HaRabim, and it hits the part that's in the Rishus HaRabim, and that ends up causing damage in the Rishus HaNizak. So then, how do we view that? If we're looking at where the damage happened, it happened Rishus HaNizak. But it happened because the animal was walking in the Rishus HaRabim, and the animal is entitled to walk in the Rishus HaRabim. So that's Or Chayu. So if that's really worth driving it, so then there should be a p'tur. Right? So far, so good. So as we saw, this leads us, if you follow this logic, it leads us to a surprise. And we started to talk about this, and the Amshul Shlomo makes this point also. Marshal was a contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch, and he wrote on a number of Masechtas in the Amshul Shlomo. For some reason, the one on Bava Kamma is the most quoted of his svar. The Amshul Shlomo on Bava Kamma is always a lot of famous Amshul Shlomos in Bava Kamma, just so you know if you want to fill in all the Amshul Shlomos in Bava Kamma. So the question is, okay, so you'll tell me that Shane and Regel is Pater B'Shus HaRabim because if you're going to take your cow into the Rishus HaRabim, you're allowed to do that, and it's just normal for them to eat stuff on the way and to step on stuff in the Rishus HaRabim, and you can't be expected to be on top of that, so Mamela is a p'tur. So what bothered us about that? The dangerous animals, right? The Mishnah says that there are a number of animals that are considered to be muad from birth. A lion, a wolf, a leopard, things like that. So, what is the status of their damage? So we discussed it a little bit, that if you want to say that it's muad, the language of the Mishnah is that it's muad, Samur on the surface sounds like that's a Karen language. Something starts off Tam as a Karen and then becomes Muad. But the Rishonim, some of the Rishonim at least explain that no, it's not Karen in this category. We have to assume Muad does not only mean Karen, because Karen, by definition, according to these Rishonim, is Mishuna. And these animals, not Mishuna, this is what they do. So, therefore, you have to assume that it's something else. It's something like Shane or Ragel. So then the big question is, so hold on a second. So you're telling me that the Ptur of Rishos HaRabim by Shane and Ragel is because essentially you can't blame the owners. This is something that's natural and expected, and they're allowed to be in public, and the owners can't be expected to stop it. So that's true also by a lion or a leopard. You can bring your lion or your leopard in, and that's okay. That's very troubling. And that's one of the points the Amshul Shlomo makes. So how do you deal with that? Yes, sir.
Sorry, just to figure out, I don't understand what the problem is of bringing up. Let's say you have an animal that's muad from birth, right? Like lion or tiger or leopard. You bring them to a shisarat, then what's the problem up until it does nothing?
Okay, so I'm not hanging around in your neighborhood. I mean, the point is that they're very dangerous, so presumably you're not supposed to do that. Presumably you're not supposed to... If the whole premise is the putter for your cow or whatever, because it's berishus, you have the right to do that. Are you going to tell me that you have an equal right to bring a lion into the public street? And then be shocked
when... I'm
not
saying it's like a normal thing to do, but like, I mean, let's just say the city council says, yeah, you can bring your lion...
It's supposed to not do that. I mean, presumably, even if the city council says you can, but it's clearly a dangerous thing to do. You're not allowed to put people at risk. So it seems very hard to swallow that you should be allowed to do this, and therefore there should be a p'tur. So a number of later Sfarim talk about this. So we mentioned, now just to fill in a little bit more, we mentioned the Pischei Choshen. Pischei Choshen is kedai to have. So it's in the volume on Nizke Mamon, in Perek Vav, in Siv Beis. He talks about this in the footnotes. And he says, essentially, we started to say this a little bit last week, that you have to assume that this is not a stam wild animal, but it is a trained animal. A trained animal, because the Mishnah says there's a difference, except for snakes. So maybe you have a trained lion, and therefore there is a heter to bring him in. Aye, but then we have the paradox. So then, if he does damage, why are we calling that Orche? We just said that he's safe enough to bring into the public. So apparently they coexist. That yes, he's trained, so it's safe. But if he actually does something, it doesn't change the nature. The nature is still there, and therefore it reverts to an Orchaihu status. Which again is not going
to
make...
Orchai?
Yeah, it's considered to still be Orchaihu. You don't change its nature by training it. There's still a difference between a trained lion and a cow. The cow is still considered to be a non-dangerous animal, while the lion is a trained dangerous animal. So because it's trained, you can bring it into the public, but if it does damage, then it's still considered to be kedarko. Hi.
No, I don't know the Gemara on me, but how do you read that into the Mishnah, though? Like, actually, into... See, if I remember correctly, it seemed like the case in the Mishnah was referring to any animals, and then it makes a distinction at the end, but that you could also read it referring to really even wild animals would be muad, and you'd have to pay in the
Yeah, they are. That's the side. I think in both cases, animals trained or not trained are considered to be muad. But just what we're trying to figure out is, so why should it be patur rishus
ravin? And that
doesn't include also wild animals? It does, but the question is, the wild animals, you're going to be chayiv anyway. But the question is, how do you understand the p'tur in Rishos HaRabbah? If we're going to put this in the category of Shein and Regel, so how does that follow the logic that we've seen so far?
So they're not included in the p'tur, the wild animals.
So what sounds like they are, because right. If you say it's Shein and Regel, that's the din. Shein and Regel is p'tur Rishos HaRabbah. So that's what we're trying to grapple with. So how could they be included in the p'tur? It's hard to say they're included in any rishus. So that's where he's threading a needle here, that if they're tamed, if they're domesticated, there is rishus, but if it does something bad, there is still that nature to blame it on.
Why is that not a glaring hole in his
logic? A glaring hole in whose logic?
In
the rush?
I mean the rush, because it's a question answering for
right, so what's the glaring hole part? The part that it has to be such a narrow kind of balance?
Just the discrepancy between... If it's strained, then it's strained. But if it's more, then it's more. I don't understand how... Why would I be allowed to take it if it's strained if we still say that its taba is not changing? It still has a taba...
Yeah, it's still like... I certainly wouldn't feel comfortable with the lamaise. It's still pretty scary, right? You know, and then you have to... It didn't, like, what happened to Siegfried and Roy, one of them was, I think, pretty badly hurt, right, by the tiger. They spend a lifetime working with. Ultimately, it's true that even when they're trained, there's only so much you can get away with as far as they're concerned. So it comes back to the question, is there ever really a heter? Can you ever really be safe just because the animal is supposedly trained? And it's a fair question. But Lamaisa, that's the approach.
Can you say that with anything? Like everything has the potential to become a muad also. Are you going to say that?
Right, he's saying.
Once something's a muad, it was usher for that. For it to be in Rishon in the first place?
Well, but then the Bailam didn't know, so it's a surprise.
But
here you're saying that this is, so you're saying, let's say, a animal that starts off as a safe animal and later on is proven to be dangerous.
That's
is that comparable from the opposite direction to an animal that was known to be dangerous but was trained? Or do they meet in the middle? Maybe not. Maybe then it's an interesting question whether they're comparable or not. Sam?
But even if those two said, like we're saying that
Right.
So you're always father. I don't see why.
Well, if it ends up doing something somewhere else, you'll be chayiv. That's exshalim.
Mishuzarab.
It sounds like you're pater. That's what it sounds like. Now, there could be a couple of modifications to that.
Didn't he also say that?
So, now let's talk about some modifications. So, he, Pistrei Choshen, goes on to say that if it was an untrained animal, says, Zinachanami, maybe you actually really should be chayiv for that. Maybe there should not be a p'tur in such a case. But maybe we don't talk about it, I think is what he means. Maybe we don't talk about it because it's pretty uncommon for there to be untrained wild animals in Rishos HaRabbah. And those animals tend not to have owners to blame it on. So we're not likely to discuss the scenario of somebody who is liable for letting his wild lion run through the streets because it doesn't happen too often. And I assume when it doesn't happen too often, he's not talking about Midin Mishunna or Chai saying that. Lamaisa, it's just not the topic of our discussion. Because how likely is that to be the case? So if that's the scenario, okay, so then there in Echonami, there's no real p'tur v'rishos harabim, there's no rishos v'rishos harabim for such a thing, it's just not what we're likely to experience, so it's not the subject of the discussion. Mori?
Yeah, why is Orchei pater in Rishos
HaRabim? So it sounds like Orchei is pater because once we're saying that it's a legitimate activity to begin with, it's legitimate to bring your animals into Rishos HaRabim, so then we have to understand that there are certain things that come with that. It's going to walk on things. It's going to eat things that it's likely to eat, that it normally eats. And the Bailam can't spend every second of their day walking behind them and trying to stop that from happening. So we couldn't have both those ideas coexist, that they can bring it into Rishos HaRabim and they're expected to stop all these very basic things from happening.
It's like a gray area middle ground, because I'm allowed to, we're still allowed to bring it there. If it was
right, free, that's the point. I'm allowed to bring it there, and since this is what happens naturally once you bring it, so you have to say you're putri, because how else can you live?
Can we call it middle ground, or is that?
I don't know what it's middle necessarily. It's saying that that's
in between being bua to the point that I can't bring it, but I'm also not responsible.
Well, what we discussed last week is that it's interesting that orche kind of flips eventually. That when we're talking about chain veregel of normal animals, orche is a reason to exempt. When we're talking about chain veregel, we're talking about Karen. So Karen, once it's established as Muad, and it's established as Orche, that's the reason to expect greater care. I heard a drasha about this on Shabbos in a wholly different context. You know, it sounds like that you have that from the Pasuk, that's say in Parshas Noach, that first God says, I'm going to destroy the whole world because the Yetzer Rak Rak Olayom, and then ultimately says, I'm not going to destroy them again, ki it's a rub in the world. It sounds like it's the same thing. The reason to hold them responsible, the reason to say, what can you do? Like we find that later in the Torah also with Am Ksheoref. It's sometimes invoked as a reason to punish the Jewish people, and sometimes it's invoked to say, you got to understand that's the way they are. So it's interesting. There is some kind of very thin line between where it becomes, listen, this is what's expected, and this is what's expected, therefore it's your responsibility to do something about it. So here, what seems to hinge on is the Rishus question, that if we're going to say you can have animals, and you can have them in public spaces, so then what is natural, you can't be held responsible for. But if there's a particular danger that's also natural for this animal, then it seems like you shouldn't have Rishus to bring them in the first place. And if you don't, so then why is there a Ptur? So according to the Pesachei Choshen, maybe there's no Ptur. Maybe if you really bring an untrained dangerous animal into Rishus HaRabim, then there is no Ptur. Now he quotes the Aruch HaShulchan, but if you look in the Aruch HaShulchan, Aruch HaShulchan has a different logic. You get to see it was on today's list, you guys get to the essay. So if you look and see it tomorrow, that the Aruch HaShulchan actually says that he invokes the question. It's according to the Amshul Shlomo Asi, he invokes the question that doesn't make sense to say that your lion and your wild animals should be putter versus a rabbit. But he says ultimately the Torah wasn't mechalik, and therefore it ends up pottering the dangerous animals too. But, he says, as a matter of practicality, so the tzibor will force somebody who has dangerous animals to stop having them and stop bringing them b'rishus harabim. So on a societal level, we're not going to allow this practically. You know, the word rishus meaning actually allowing it, we're not going to allow it. But if it does happen, in the nechanami, that's the pasuk, and the Torah wasn't mechalik. So once it's said that it's okay for the cow, it's okay for these animals too. But only in the sense that there's a technical p'tur. But societally, we'd have to do something to stop people from doing this. Now in the shiurim of Reb Leib Malin, who was a shiva in Beis HaTalmud, so he has a discussion about this. Reb Leib Malin, Reb Arya Leib Malin. Spelled something like Mem Aleph Lamed Yud Nun. So he says, ultimately, he says, you know, for example, in the Shulchan Aruch, did you see this? This was also on today's list, in Shin Pei Tes. So the Shulchan Aruch says that you have a halacha of Rishus HaNizak, that the animal is liable for damage it does in the Rishus HaNizak and not Rishus HaRabim. And what happens if the victimized animal comes into the Rishus of the Mazik animal, Rishus HaMazik? So then the Bailim are Pater, right? Why? Because there's a Svar, they could say, that who asked your animal to come into my Rishus? If you're going to come into my property and provoke my animal, so it's going to get bit. So far, so good. But the Shulchan Aruch goes on to add I'll read you the text. Should have it here. Shulchan Aruch goes on to add that it's connected to this Petur of Shein V'Regel. So I'll read you the Lashon. If you can see it. Basically, it says that B'med Devar Mamurim, the Shin Pei Tes Yod, B'med Devar Mamurim, Kishanich Neses HaBehem Ol Rishos HaNizik V'Zikoseyu. So if your animal goes into Rishos HaNizik and is Mazik, Yechayiv. Avalam Nichnas HaNizak L'Rishos HaMazik, if the victimized animal goes into the Mazik's property, V'Zikoso Behemto Shol Bal HaBayis, and there the animal causes damage, Hareza Pater al Hakol, so the owner of the damaging animal is Pater, Shareyu Omerlo, Ilu lo nichnasal Rishusi lo gilacha hezek. If you hadn't come into my property, you wouldn't have gotten hurt. Baharei Mefurish Betora, Vishilach Esbiro, Bir Bistayacher. So he quotes that pasuk of Bir Bistayacher. So in someone else's property, not in mine. So comments the Ramah. This is Kol Zeh Lashon HaRambam. Okay, that is quoted from the Rambam. But still, Tzarichin. I don't get it. What's his question? This is a pasuk that was invoked. Right, where's that pasuk from? Shein, right? It says, D'mikra Zeh B'Shein V'Regel Hu D'Chziv L'Potron B'Rishos Shnehem. That pasuk is invoked to exempt Shein when it was done in a public place. Right here, you're talking about a case where we're going to pater in the mazik's rishus specifically, and even keren, which wouldn't have been pater rishus or avim. Ain inyan mikra zeh tamilav. This doesn't come from the pasuk. Ella the ptur mikavach the amalei you lo nichnas de v'chule. The ptur is because he could say who asked you to come in here, but not because of the pasuk. And then he adds the practicality, v'had the patur b'rishos ha-mazik, and this patur is davka shenichna shlo b'rishos. The assumption is that he shouldn't have gone in there, he didn't have permission. Aval nichnas b'rishos, if he had the right to come in, he could go in Poland, nichnas l'tfos schar, and workers are working there and have the right to come in and ask to get paid. V'nog chanchar shobal abay is chayiv. So it's not absolute. So that's the language of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. So the question is, where does the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam get this idea from that there is a p'tur of b'stei acher that applies here also? So Reb Leib Malin explains, they say we're going to probably run out of time before getting to explain this fully. I'll have to expand on this a little bit more tomorrow. It says that there's actually two different p'turim at play here. Now when you look at the Rush, and the Rush says about Orchayhu, and that's the reason for the Ptur of Ubir B'Steyacher. So there's two different things at play here. There is the Pasuk, and there also is the Svar that comes out of the Pasuk. So because of the Pasuk, so you have a broad Ptur, which apparently would include even things that don't necessarily have a svara to it, like the lion and stuff in public places. But there's also a svara that the pasuk conveys. And therefore, once you have that pasuk, you can take the svara and use it for other things. So it says, the din of rishus ha... On the one hand, you have a din of rishus ha nizak, to be chayiv. That's learned out from the pasuk. And he says, the din of Rishos HaRabim, which also happens not to be the Rishos HaNizak, that's a different din. That's the din of Or Chayiv. The din is that it's normal to have animals walking around there, so then there's a p'tur. But it's not the application of the pasuk. The application of the pasuk is specifically Rishos HaNizak, and not other things. So when it comes to Karen, so you don't have the p'tur of Orchayu in Rishos HaRabim. But in the Rishos HaMazik, you do. So this is discussed at some length. And I guess I'll just get this part in, and then maybe we'll expand on it a little bit more. Rav Shlomo Fischer, Shlita in his Sefer Beis Yishai, has a discussion about this whole concept, and quotes from Leib Malin. And he notes, he says, you still have to explain it better, why that is. And he talks there a little bit, the whole idea, more in the footnote, about we say darshin in time of the kra, not darshin in time of the kra. When do you have the right to interpret what the pasuk is getting at and the reasoning behind it? And he says, ultimately, it's not a stira to have these two different things coming from the same pasuk. That you can say, on the one hand, that we have a pasuk, and because ein darshin in time b'dakra, we're not allowed to reduce the applicability of the pasuk. So whatever the pasuk says, the pasuk is often applied in a low plug kind of way, and that's often the way the Torah operates. That the Torah has a svara we can understand within a certain din, but still applies that din across the board, even places where the svara doesn't apply. So therefore, the authority of the pasuk is going to be across the board, even when the logic doesn't come through. Meaning that a pasuk can often have a reason we can understand, and that reason may indeed be true. But nonetheless, the derech of the Torah is to make absolute dinim, and the din is going to still apply even when the reasoning doesn't apply. And that's the whole logic behind Ein Darshin in Time B'Dakra, that we don't have the right to say, well, I understand what this din is about, and therefore I can make exceptions. You can't make exceptions. But at the same time, there's still a value to the Time B'Dakra for our practical purposes. And you can use the time of Dekra to understand other situations. So he says, therefore, it's not a contradiction to have this one pasuk yield two different dinim. That there's an across-the-board rule of the pasuk, and presumably to address our issue here also, that Shein V'Regel, our Pater and Rosh Hashanah as an absolute, that's essentially the language of the Aruch HaShulchan. He doesn't say it with all this explanation, but that half sentence is in the Aruch HaShulchan, that Lo Chilka HaKasav, the Torah didn't distinguish between the logic applies and where it doesn't apply. But the logic does help us in that to understand other dinim, it can be applied. So we see from this pasuk that there's a svara of Orchayu. And in other situations, Orchayu can be applied even independent of the pasuk. But we don't have the right to limit the pasuk based on our understanding. So that's a very fascinating application. So it's getting late, so maybe we'll just quickly review, and maybe we'll say a word or two more about that. We still need to finish up the point about Mishasa, so hopefully you'll see the sources about that, and we'll get that done. And then I want to do the seasonal application of the sugya, so we'll get that done before the end of the week, God willing, and then move on to Daf Gimel. Okay, so just to quickly review what we spoke about, so we talked a little bit more about the machlokes than we'd seen before, about Shein and Machlokas, the Rashba and his Talmud, about when you eat but then damage it other ways, and the Machlokas, the Rach and the Tosfos sons, about whether Tinfa Peiros Hanasa is one thing or the other. And in addition to what we said in the past about it, we mentioned Rav Asher Weiss's potential approach that maybe Hanah L'Hazeko as Shein, maybe that means either that there's a bigger Yetzirah and therefore you have to be on top of it, or it means that there's a nene component that you have to pay for the benefit that was received. But ultimately says neither of those are really relevant, because when we talk about Avos Nezikin, we really have the Machayiv from the Tzad HaShava, Darka Mahazik, Shmiras and Alecha, and these subcategories are only important for figuring out different details once we already know that there is a general Chiyuv. And then we got into more addressing the question of, if you say like the Rush that Orchayu is the basic idea for Petur B'Shusha Rabban for Shein, and he gives the Nafkamina of a long tree that makes you create damage in Rosh Hashanah Nizak, even though the action happened in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So then the question presents itself, so what about these inherently dangerous animals, which many Rishonim see are also Shein? How could it be that you'll have a Ptor Rosh Hashanah Rabbim? That's not Bereshus. So I mentioned a number of approaches, the Pesachei Choshen, that it's only talking about trained animals, and if the animals are not trained, so then in Achanami maybe there's no Rishus, and we just don't talk about it because it's not a likely scenario that you have wild animals that are there, and the Rishus around them, and there are owners to blame it on. And the Aruch HaShulchan, that is according to the Yamshul Shomo, that the Torah is not the Mechalik, once it has this p'tur for the first cases. And then building on that kind of idea, we discussed with Blaib Malin, who said there's really two different dinim here. There's a din of Orchayu that explains the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim idea, and the Pasuk is talking about a specific din of Rosh Hashanah Mazik, and he used that to discuss the Shulchan Aruch, who invokes the Pasuk, even when talking about Karen Rosh Hashanah Mazik. So then we mentioned that Rav Shlomo Fisher's expansion of this point, quoting this idea, but saying I have to explain a little bit more, that they both can come from the same pasuk, because ultimately the pasuk does have a style, like the Aruch HaShulchan wrote, of not distinguishing between scenarios, even when there is a logic to do so. But the logic can still be extrapolated to apply to other things. Okay, so we'll stop there. Do we have a volunteer for Mincha? Maury, you look like you're interested in that one.
No, sorry.